Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Ahí va a llegar el gol del Arsenal, Ozil. Marca Mesut Ozil.
Bellerín, otro defensor, otro disparo, Monreal, gol. Marca el futbolista español, marca Nacho Monreal. Pim, pam, pum.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello and welcome to another Arscast Extra, as always with James from Gunnerblog. James, goodly Sunday evening to you.
Goodly Sunday evening to you too, and goodly Monday morning, I guess it'll be, for everyone listening.
I had some people last week saying, well, if you're recording on a Sunday evening, why don't you put the podcast out the same way you do on a Monday? You record and then it's up in about 20, 30 minutes. Why not do that? So I'm considering that.
Wow. Early release. That sounds bad. But, you know, people, they're impatient for it.
Absolutely, absolutely. Impatient for what is, as well, James, episode 250. 250. Oh,
I completely forgot.
Yeah.
What, that's like nearly 4 years, is it? It must be.
Yeah, it's quite a lot. It's quite a lot. Yeah, okay, yeah. When was the first one? Actually, I should go back and check that out, shouldn't I?
Yeah, Arscast Extra episode one.
I think
we've obviously missed a couple, but 52 weeks in a year. So you've got to think 4 years away. 4 years isn't too far away from now.
Yeah. Wow. Arscast Extra episode one, January 27th, 2014. So, yeah.
Okay.
A little bit over 4 years, but there you go.
Bad maths, actually. Yeah, that's appalling maths from me.
Well, no.
It's coming up for 5 years.
Wow, shit. We've done some extra ones, isn't it? That's how we've done it. That's
maybe
the thing. Yeah, there you go. Anyway, congratulations to you for being part of this.
Are you saying that to me or to the listeners?
No, to you. To you.
Oh,
I was going to get you a present, but I forgot. It burst, actually, in my suitcase. I got your present.
Yes.
And it just burst.
That old excuse.
Yeah.
my dog ate it. I mean, your dog is eating everything, to be fair.
She is. Holy shit, she is. Yeah, I was sitting there today. We'd taken her out for a walk. Big, long walk. Taking the two of them out for a big, long walk. They just got fed. I sat down on the sofa, and I realized that she'd walked into the room with a hat that I wear. Just a kind of a sort of cap type thing.
And let me guess, she wasn't wearing it.
She was not wearing it. She was eating it. Well, she was about to settle down and have a good chomp on it. So, yeah.
Maybe she had placed some sort of bet where she'd said, if Arsenal keep a clean sheet against Watford, I'll eat my hat or Andrew's hat.
She'll definitely eat my hat. She'd eat anyone's hat. But I suppose we should also thank the listeners for being with us for 250 episodes. If you have been here from episode one all the way through to episode 250, thank you so much. And we're sorry.
Yeah, you have remarkable patience and loyalty, and we're eternally grateful.
Oh, my goodness. Anyway, I was going to ask you something, and I've forgotten completely what it is. It might come back to me. So should we just crack on with the football
Let's
side
get
of
into
things?
It. Why not? What a perfect game for the 250th episode. The James from Gunnerblog derby, the club I love against my hometown.
Yes.
Arsenal 2, Watford 0.
How conflicted were you in the stands on Saturday afternoon?
Not very conflicted at all. No, well, actually, tell a lie. I suppose a little part of me felt a tiny bit for Watford, only that, you know, they probably deserved a bit more from the game than they got. You know, the fact they didn't score,
nothing to do with it.
Yeah, well, it hasn't. And I mean, the fact that they didn't manage to score a goal is pretty extraordinary. This has been quite a weird game, though, because I was sort of, you know, as you do, looking at Twitter after the match and seeing what various people made of it and how angry people were or not. Mm. And the reaction to this performance and this game seems very divided. There seem to be people out there who are kind of heralding this as a great win and a great performance, and then equally people who were quite alarmed by what they saw. And it's interesting how people have interpreted the match in very, very different ways.
I guess so. It was a strange old game, really. It was quite open, wasn't it? From pretty much the first whistle, You know, sometimes the first half can be a bit cagey. The two teams, you know, sound each other out, and they, you know, a little bit of sparring, and they can be a bit tedious. I think we've seen that from time to time, you know, where first half is a bit dull and then things come to life in the second half. But I thought the first half was really, really open. I think we had probably the best chance of the first half with Alexandre Lacazette, which he missed. But it was quite end-to-end stuff for a first half, which, you know, again, just feeds into this complete inability I have to figure out what we're doing and how we're trying to do it. You know, I don't come away from this game a whole lot wiser. There are things, I think, that occurred to me during the game and things which we saw, which we'll touch on in a couple of minutes. But generally speaking, I'm not that much the wiser about what Unai Emery is doing with this team in terms of the football he wants it to play than I was maybe ahead of the first game.
No, I mean, what we are at the moment is slow starters. We've talked about that already on the show this season.
Yeah.
But listening to Emery's comments after the game, that's not necessarily something that he wants or intends. You know, it's not as if he's going out this going, keep it tight in the first half. And frankly, we didn't keep it tight. I mean, the way I saw it, I thought Watford actually had the better of the first half. I know you say we had the best chance, and we certainly did with Lacazette, but it wasn't really something that we created. It came from an error, really. I mean, Lacazette closing down and nicking the ball. And granted, he should have scored, but there wasn't much else to shout about from an attacking point of view. And I just thought they had the run of the game, really. That's how it looked to me. I mean, I was sat at that end of the pitch that they were attacking, and sometimes that can colour your experience of the game and your interpretation of it. But it seemed like they were the stronger side, and they seemed, and I mean that in every respect, physically they were pretty impressive, quite a powerful team, and I felt we struggled to cope with that. And all through the first half, I was watching Emery, and he was constantly talking to Xhaka and Torreira. I mean, Torreira he spoke to throughout the 90 minutes, but particularly in the first half, and he seemed to be trying to get them to play deeper than they were actually playing. I think he was worried about Deeney winning knockdowns and there not necessarily being people to pick up the space. So he was always pulling Xhaka and Torreira back deeper and deeper, closer to the back four. But at halftime, I was, you know, I was a bit like, well, this is more of the same. Kind of like we got against Everton. We haven't really turned up for this game.
Yeah. I mean, I think your text to me just said, not great, is it? And it wasn't particularly great. I mean, you say, you know, one of the things that we are at the moment is slow starters, but one of the things that we are at the moment also is what's the word I'm looking for here? We're winning games, you know, and that's a really good habit to get into. And, you know, I think we can discuss where maybe we have some concerns, but I think first and foremost, we have to give credit to the team for pulling a win, not necessarily out of the hat. Would you say it was a hat? Oh, not really a hat. Perhaps like a party hat. No, small hat. What's a small hat? A cap? Not a cap. I don't know what I'm trying to say here, but like perhaps just a small covering for the head.
A fez, maybe.
A fez. Yeah, maybe a fez. And you know, there's a resilience to this team that wasn't there last season. There's an ability to do what we did against Watford, an ability to do what we did against Everton, to do what we did against Cardiff, for example, that wasn't there last season. I think that, if we're going to talk a little bit about the things that maybe worried us, we ought to probably start with some of the things that we were happier with.
You're right to pull me up on that, because ultimately we've won the game, and by virtue of talking about the first half, it maybe does sound a little negative, but I am actually really positive about this run of wins. Is it seven consecutive wins now?
Yeah, seven in all competitions. Yeah.
I mean, that's no mean feat, whatever the nature of the opposition. And I do think that, I tried to make this point on Twitter and I got a bit of backlash for it, but I do think that as a fan base, we talk about performance a lot, and I wonder to what extent that's because we're kind of conditioned in that way by the manager we had for 20 years, who was obsessed by performance. He didn't want to speak about results often, you know, unless it was a good one, I guess. But, you know, it is results that count, and this guy is getting them. And I do wonder if we'd brought in somebody like Diego Simeone and he'd managed to lead a sort of dysfunctional team to seven consecutive wins, I suspect we'd all be saying, well, this is because he's a genius. He's got the winning mentality. You know, he can pull it out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And we're just, because we don't necessarily regard Emery in that way and we don't necessarily anticipate him being that sort of character, we don't see it through that prism. But yeah, it is an excellent run.
It is. And I guess it's as well as we don't really believe that's the kind of coach that he is. He's not a Diego Simeone. So we know he wants to do things a little bit differently and he wants to play the game a little bit differently. Again, substitution made an impact. I think Alex Iwobi, when he came on, had a positive impact on the game. I did see some people on Twitter saying, when Iwobi came on, Watford had kind of their best spell of the game and they did have a period of pressure that they could have scored a few goals, but we went through it. I just think the arrival of Iwobi gave the team a bit more balance in general. And I think we're looking at the Ramsey situation, we're looking at the Ozil situation. And when I said I haven't learned a great deal from what we saw against Watford, I think one of the things that is quite clear to me now is that you can't play Aaron Ramsey and Mesut Ozil in the same team in this particular system. Do you wonder why it is that Emery has not even considered Ramsey for one of his midfield two?
That is interesting, isn't it? Because he has taken Ramsey out the side. Was it the Newcastle game where he didn't play? There was an away match where, I'm pretty sure, a home game. There was a game Ramsey didn't start. I forget which one. So
I'll look it up while you make your point here.
The point I was, all I was going to say was that it's clear that he doesn't regard him as someone who can play in that midfield too. You know, ultimately, Guendouzi's been playing there ahead of him when it might have made more sense in theory to drop an experienced player like Ramsey in there. So evidently, Emery has looked back at Ramsey's performances for Arsenal. I'm sure he's gone over the tapes and thought, this is not someone I trust in those two defensive roles, partly because of what I was saying just a minute ago. He spent so much of the game pulling those guys into defensive positions to cover the back four, to sit in front of the defence, and I guess he doesn't think Ramsey's that kind of player.
Yeah, it's really curious. It was Chelsea game, by the way, that he started on the bench. I mean, for me, and I've said this on the podcast loads of times, I think Ramsey has got all the attributes to be a really top central midfield player in a midfield two, you know, even in this system. But I wonder, is it just an unwillingness on his part to want to play there? Does he want to play further forward? I mean, I can't imagine Aaron Ramsey wants to play in the position that he's being asked to play in by Unai Emery. I mean, people have said, when Ramsey went off, we were much better. I don't think it was necessarily just the fact that Ramsey went off. I think it's a fact that we took a player off who's playing in a position which really, really doesn't suit him. And we have kind of, we spoke about this a bit last week, but we kind of have three players in that front four who aren't playing in positions that they like or that they seem to know what to do in, you know? Mm. They all look a little bit at sea. Ozil, when he came more central, got much more involved and had a big contribution. Aubameyang looks kind of unhappy, I think, a little bit on the left-hand side. He only made 12 passes. He didn't have an attempt on goal. And Ramsey, like, if explain to me what Ramsey's role is. Can you?
I couldn't.
Yeah.
No.
You see, that's the thing. Where exactly is his position? Where is he supposed to be playing? What is he supposed to be doing? How is he supposed to combine with Ozil and Lacazette? You know, I don't really get what it is that Emery is trying to do here. So I can't remember what the overall point of this was. Oh, is Ramsey as part of a midfield too? He just obviously doesn't see him as a guy who will do the job for him.
Well, I suppose when you look at it, I mean, who would he put him in there with? He could put him next to Xhaka, but we've seen that partnership before, and it's had its problems. Torreira, maybe, but if there's one thing we seem to have learned about Emery, it's that he really likes picking Granit Xhaka. I mean, he picks him every single game.
So did Arsene Wenger.
Yeah, and so I suspect that, you know, he regards him as really important in a way that, you know, he doesn't think Ramsey can do that job as that kind of deep line playmaker. And I do see the logic in that. One of the things we've been crying out for with this Arsenal team is a solid midfield base. And look, I know Xhaka's got his problems, but in theory, Xhaka and Torreira is more secure, maybe a little bit more conservative than a midfield two with Ramsey in front of it. There is a logic to playing him in front, but it just isn't working at all. I mean,
no.
What was it? I think I know he wasn't on the pitch the full game, but 19 passes, you know, suggests he wasn't massively involved. That's what your eyes tell you as well. Like, he just seems like a very peripheral figure, even though he's got a central role in the team. The number 10 you think of as your playmaker, but this is a guy who seems just not to be involved with our play.
Yeah, yeah. You know, he does... you know, he's a guy who really likes to be involved, Ramsey. He wants to be involved in the play, but, you know, the game sort of passes him by, and I think it's also true of Mesut Ozil in this system as well, where the games tend to pass him by. He sparked into life in the second part of it. But we had an injury problem just before halftime. Petr Cech, his hamstring went doink, and Bernd Leno came on. The NBC commentator at one point called him Jay Leno.
Right, okay.
Which is kind of amazing.
Yeah.
But what a kind of introduction he had early in the second half when he was called upon to make his first save in the Premier League. It was a really brilliant save from Troy Deeney.
That's a great save. It's a really good save down low in the corner. And, you know, it's one of those where watching it in the ground, I really thought it was in. So that was a fantastic stop. I mean, Watford, you know, we touched on this, but I think their XG on the day was something like 1.9. So that speaks to some poor finishing on their part, but also some really good saves. And that was definitely one from Leno. He didn't have a perfect game. There were a couple of moments where maybe his handling wasn't the best, or he punched when perhaps he should have caught. But
yeah.
That was certainly an encouraging moment for him and will have given him a lot of confidence.
Yeah, I think he made another really good save, came out well to smother at the guy's feet. Some of his punching was good. There was one where he came to get the ball and didn't get there. He missed it and sort of went over the top of his defender, which was a little bit unconvincing. But just in terms of shot stopping, you could have no complaints about him. And obviously, he's now got a chance to stake a bit of a claim in the team, because Cech's going to be out for about 3 weeks, we would imagine, providing it's not any more serious than just a regular hamstring strain.
We've seen him have hamstring problems before, I think, Cech. So, yeah, hopefully nothing too serious. But, I mean, Emery said after the match, 2 to 3 weeks. I've never seen an Arsenal player come back from a hamstring strain in a fortnight. So, we'll see. But it's a big chance for Leno. And in a way, thank goodness he got those Europa and League Cup games under his belt. It shows the value of rotating the side, because when someone needs to be ready to step in, they're not completely rusty.
Yeah. On the again, on the NBC stream I was watching, Tony Gale was the co-commentator, who is basically intolerable in as many respects as you could possibly imagine. But his assertion that Cech's hamstring injury came because Unai Emery is making him kick the ball more, you know, pass the ball more, was really right up there with one of the stupidest things he said all day.
That is pretty incredible. I sort of don't really know what to say about that.
Yeah.
But then with Tony Gale, a lot of things he says provoke that response.
Yes, yes.
But, I mean, at half-time, you know, that change was just before half-time. There was a kind of tactical change from Emery, which is that he switched Aubameyang to the right, didn't he? Which, you know, I mean, I guess it was to some extent an admission that whatever it was the front four were doing wasn't really working. I think Ozil went out to the left and he kept Ramsey in the middle for that first, you know, 20 minutes or so. I don't know quite what the thinking was there, whether it was just to mix it up, whether it was because the Watford left-back had been quite a threat going forward in the first half and he wanted to pin him back. But, I mean, it didn't really help Aubameyang out a great deal. It wasn't like he was particularly better out there, was it?
No, I don't think so. He looks very peripheral on the flanks. I know he scored goals there and we've justified the selection, you know, because you kind of have to play Lacazette because he's playing very well. He made an important contribution to the second goal. He was involved in the first goal, you know, so he's played his way into the team. But, you know, these are questions that I'm sure, you know, we're pondering. I'm sure Unai Emery is pondering as well. You know, he must be aware that it's not working and that it's not as effective as it should be, and he's not getting the best out of a world-class striker. You know, if we're seeing it, he's got to be seeing it too. So, I presume it's something he's going to be agonizing over. But I spoke about that period of pressure that Watford put us under. They had some good chances, and I think a really good chance went just wide of the post not long before we scored. I think it was Isaac Success who went through and clipped the ball just beyond the far post. If you look at the By the Numbers piece by Scott on Arseblog News, Watford had six what are classified big chances, which is more than they've created in any other game this season. And while we can appreciate the fact that we're winning games and appreciate the winning run and be delighted about that, I also think we have to be concerned that over the course of the, how many Premier League games is it now? Is it seven Premier League games, nine games in total? You know, we're still very, very vulnerable to opposition attacks.
That's undoubtedly the case. And, you know, when you look at sort of the chances each side create, when you look at the Everton match, it's much closer than it ultimately is on paper in the final scoreline. And it's the same with the Watford match. I mean, this was probably one of their better performances of the season. They're not a bad side. I mean, they've been going pretty well.
No, they're pretty good, yeah.
Yeah, they've been going well in the league. They're only one place behind us, after all. But, yeah, we got away with it a bit. I mean, that success one that you mentioned where he went through, it's so close, isn't it? I mean, it's literally a sort of roll of the ball away from a spin of the ball from finding the net. So things might have been very different. We didn't have Socrates, of course, which is something we didn't mention. But yeah, he was a surprise absentee. I actually thought on an individual level, and I know we've had a couple of questions about this, I thought Holding did really well.
Yeah.
But the same old problems are there in the defence, and they did find it, you know, worryingly easy to get at us.
They did. I mean, I thought the keeper played well. I thought Hector Bellerin, I spoke about him last week as somebody who has consistently, maybe steadily, a little bit slowly improved under Unai Emery. I think he had another good game yesterday. I think Rob Holding came in and did very well. Nacho Monreal did very well. So, you know,
he was good, yeah, Monreal.
You know, in terms of the individual performances in our defence, 4 out of 5 were excellent. There was one kind of disaster in the middle of all that, though, which was Shkodran Mustafi, who I'm sort of at the end of my tether with, James, because...
Well, you mentioned this in your blog. You were like, oh, I almost can't speak about it. But for the sake of the listeners, I am going to make you speak about it. So what was your reaction to his performance against Watford?
Well, I shouted at the TV. You know, I shouted at an inanimate object more than once. And that's a sign of, I think, either insanity or frustration. And I like to think it's probably the latter more than the former. You know, his decision-making, his concession of stupid fouls that he gave away for absolutely no good reason. I know he was up against a physical centre forward in Troy Deeney, and Andre Gray as well is a quick physical centre forward. I know you kind of have to put yourself about a bit and stand your ground as a central defender, but you can't do what he did and not expect to get penalised for it. And those things put us in moments of danger. They added to the pressure that we were under. Usually he's a good passer of the ball. I counted at least 3 where he just put the ball straight out of touch. Actually, his first pass of the day, I think we kicked off in the, was it the first half or the second? I think it was the first half. I go back to the live blog and have a look because I can find it on the live blog. I think it was literally the first few seconds of the game. Yeah, we kicked the ball off. It goes back to Mustafi. He tries a crossfield pass and it's just straight out of play.
I remember it for a throw on the defense side.
You know, and I think what we're seeing, we talked about the mistake he makes in every game, and there wasn't necessarily a particularly calamitous mistake. We go back to the free kicks if we conceded or something like that, but I just thought, how many chances does this guy get? You know, I think if it was any other player in any other position playing that badly, that regularly, or making those kind of mistakes that regularly, he would be out of the team. Now, I know we've got an issue, don't we? Because we don't have the personnel. We've got no Mavropanos, no Koscielny, and we had no Socrates. But I think as and when Socrates comes back, I really want to see Socrates and Rob Holding given a run of games together. Because I've just kind of had it with this guy making mistakes that will ultimately cost us. And I think we're a part of Watford's success, if you like, in terms of creating chances, if not scoring goals. I mean, there was one where he just got turned way too easily and he's standing there with his hand up on the edge of the box and Rob Holding came over and made a brilliant block, got him out of jail. But I think he's a problem now. I think he's a problem. You know, I'm not saying we should take him and put him in the boot of a car and drive the car off a cliff.
It's an option.
Necessarily. I'm just saying that maybe the team needs to have less Mustafi in it for a while.
Why is he getting so much grace? Why is does he get so many opportunities? Do you think it's just the scale of the investment the club made in him? I mean, he was such an expensive signing, £35 million.
I can't imagine that the price tag has got anything to do with it. I think, first and foremost, he's in the team because he's one of the two most experienced available centre-halves to Unai Emery, who's just taken over and is, you know, playing things relatively safe as possible when it comes to his defence, right? So he's using Petr Cech. He made that decision to use Petr Cech in his experience. He hasn't really seen a lot of Rob Holding, has he? You know, he might have, you know, read the dossier and, you know, watched tapes and everything like that, but he doesn't know a great deal about Rob Holding. So I think what he's done is just gone with Mustafi and Sokratis because they're his two most experienced central defenders. Why is he given such grace? Because we don't have enough central defenders.
We don't have experienced alternatives.
No.
But the thing is, I would make the case, and it sounds like you'd agree, that what Rob Holding has done against Watford and in the Europa League has come in and proven that he can be a viable alternative.
Yep.
And when Emery came in, one of the things that was exciting about him really was that he was prepared to give youth its head. You know, he was prepared to start Guendouzi ahead of more experienced players. He was prepared to bring, you know, Xhaka off at half-time if he felt he was underperforming. And there was this sort of meritocratic element to his selection. And I think if he's serious about that, and if that's a true thing, then Holding coming into the starting 11, I think, is a no-brainer. And actually, I think that extends beyond that. I think it means he needs to look at his front four as well. And someone like Alex Iwobi, it's very difficult to deny him, I think, a starting place, given what he's contributing.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's fair. You know, Holding has come in and has done well. And if he's prepared to play somebody like Guendouzi in midfield, why couldn't he play Rob Holding at centre-half?
Well, especially now he's not playing Guendouzi. You know, especially now he's got two significantly more experienced central midfielders in front of the back four. You know, there was an argument that when you had Guendouzi in there, maybe you'd want sorts of players with a bit more behind them, you know, just a bit more age, a few more games to that under their belt in the back four. But now, I think we can afford to play Holding. Frankly, I think he's performing better than Mustafi.
Yeah, I just don't think you can keep a player who's that error prone in a team for it not to cause problems. You know,
well, and the case for Mustafi, I think, has often been his passing. But as you pointed out, his passing was well short of its usual standard in this game. I think he had 76% pass completion. Holding was much, much better on the ball. So there's not even that really going for him anymore.
Yeah. So come back Sokratis and come back Lauren Koscielny, and you know, we can have a more competitive central defensive environment. Okay. So look, let's talk about the goals that we scored. Nice move,
well,
they scored. I thought it was a really great finish by Lacazette.
Same.
First. I was going, oh my goodness, how did he do that? And then you realise it just kind of hit the defender's foot and went in. Again, Tony Gale on the commentary, they showed a replay of the two guys sitting on the floor. Cathcart realises that the ball has gone in off him and Lacazette's just sitting on the ground. He just sort of gets up, you know, people are expecting him to celebrate. And Tony Gale, I think, was accusing Lacazette, that's a bit much, he's rubbing it in there. And he didn't actually do anything. He didn't sort of rub him on the top of the head, you know, there was none of that.
He barely celebrated at all, to be honest. I mean, that was how you realised it was an own goal straight away, because one suspects he would have, you know, spun away claiming it. He had a funny game, Lacazette, didn't he? Because he missed two good chances. There was the one-on-one, which he chipped wide, and there was the header as well for an Aubameyang cross that I thought he should have done better with. But he was still very involved in everything, involved in both goals, and I sort of thought had a decent overall game, just his finishing wasn't quite at the level you'd expect. You know what I mean?
Yep. I think we saw a bit more evidence of how, you know, his first touch isn't quite where you might want it to be at times, you know? But you can't argue with the contribution that he's made. Involved in the second goal as well. I think Danny Welbeck deserves some credit for this also. He kept the ball alive in midfield and won a tackle, feeding it through to, I think, Iwobi, who gave it to, or maybe it was to Lacazette. Lacazette, he gave it to Iwobi, back to Lacazette, and across then for Mesut Ozil, who arrived. And I think the finish from Mesut Ozil is a bit underrated. It wasn't quite as simple as it looked.
No, I thought it was a very good finish. Like most of his goals this season, to be honest, all of them have been pretty tidy, and he's made them look very, very easy. I actually was watching, it wasn't for this game, it was the Watford game, I was watching the warm-up, and the players do their little finishing drill just before they kick off. And, you know, likes of Aubameyang and Lacazette, they're blasting shots high and wide, and every time Ozil was given an opportunity one-on-one in these drills, he could just pass it into the net. It was so easy for him. And it did make you think, I don't know why that doesn't happen more in games. I don't know why he sometimes doesn't seem to have that composure. But this season, credit to him, I can't think of too many missed chances, and he is finishing them well.
Yeah. So look, 2-0, a clean sheet, 3 points, seven wins on the bounce. It's a weird sort of run that we're on, in that the football and some of the performances and some of the defensive vulnerabilities have been obvious. But you can't argue with results, really, can you? How do you find the balance between that? Because people will say, you know, I cop some flack on Twitter for it, you know, for saying delighted to win, but again, not the most convincing performance. And people are just like, well, just enjoy the win. Don't worry, you know, stop being moaning or negative. But I don't think it's necessarily negative to suggest that there are things that we could do better. Is that negative?
I think it's fair enough, because the concern is that when we play better teams, good teams, they will exploit these weaknesses better than, you know, those that we have faced thus far. I mean, the only thing you'd say about that is maybe there only are four or five better teams. And the big problem for us last season is that we didn't win these kinds of games. We didn't win the games against inferior opposition frequently enough. And we are at least doing that. I know we were excellent at home, but we were terrible on the road. And our away form is sort of already better than we were seeing for much of last season. Mm. So I think there is a lot to be encouraged about. I mean, if you'd offered me this, you know, seven games in, off the top four purely on goal difference, 4 points off top spot, I certainly would have taken it.
Yeah.
I think, you know, I know that we had the first two games that we lost, but I didn't really expect anything more from that. And to go and win everything subsequently, I think is good. And when you look ahead, I know, you know, we've got an away trip in Europe, but Fulham away, Crystal Palace away. They're league games. Leicester, I think, we've got at home as well. League games we should be winning. So it should carry on. I do just hope that we can, while picking up these points, find a way to tighten up at the back. And if it is dropping Mustafi for holding, then, you know, which seems like the obvious solution, then so be it. But we do need to stop giving away quite so many chances. You can only ride the luck of poor finishing for so long.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And I think probably the next little stretch of games is going to be instructive in terms of where we are, right? Because we've had these four home games, and we've got a great record at home from last season. That's carried on to this season. I'm not saying the Emirates is like a great fortress or anything like that, but our record is really, really good there, and it has been for some time. So we're kind of continuing that. And you make the point that we've won a couple of away games. We have, and that's good. And clearly our away form last season was dreadful, but Palace aren't bad. Fulham aren't bad. We've got to go to Azerbaijan on Thursday and then play Fulham at 12 o'clock on Sunday. You know, so this is where I think we're going to see Emery really rotate his squad for the Europa League game on Thursday. I think we're going to see as rotated a squad as he can get. And then we have to respond to that as well by going away from home. It's a London derby, winning that. Palace is another London derby. You know, the next two or three games, I think, will give us maybe not a better idea of the football, but certainly the character and the resilience in the side.
Yeah. And look, it's been the downfall of so many teams, hasn't it? Those Sunday games after the Thursday, they have struggled historically. And I mean, it's going to be a test. It's going to be a test for us. And I think you're right. It's going to involve a lot of rotation. You know, it was a pretty strong side we put out in the opening Europa League game. And a couple of players were asked to play in that. And then again at the weekend. I wonder if he'll take that risk again this time round. I'm not so sure.
No, I don't think he will, you know. by the time you get back from Azerbaijan, it's going to be what? Late, early Friday morning, something like that. They'll turn around and come straight back home. But, you know, it doesn't give you a lot of turnaround time. You've got to get the players who have played a little bit of a rest. And some of them will, of course, be involved in the game on Sunday against Fulham. So we are also 5 points ahead of Manchester United, James.
Yes, that hasn't escaped my attention. Alexis Sanchez left out of the squad entirely.
Well, he was in the squad that travelled to the game, but just left out of the team and left out of the 18. He was sitting on the bench or behind the bench looking, wow, I mean, what a... We knackered him, didn't we? But like, we basically got the best years out of him and knackered him in the process.
It seems to be the case. I mean, are you worried that Jose is kind of peaking too soon almost? Are you worried that things are going so badly for him that they might have to sack him and then business will pick up a bit at Old Trafford?
Yeah, I reckon so. I don't think there's long left, to be honest. There can't be. Look at the team he picked against. Who the hell was it? Who did they play?
West Ham.
Yeah. Even we beat West Ham, for goodness sake. You look at the team, McTominay playing as a centre half and stuff. You know, he's just doing stuff now to wind people up and to get sacked. And maybe Jose Mourinho's greatest talent as a manager is signing a new long-term contract and then managing to get himself fired like within about a year, so they have to pay him a huge amount of money. It's pretty
uncanny,
good, isn't it?
Isn't it, how he manages to do that?
Yeah.
It's nice work if you can get it. But I am enjoying it enormously. I mean, you know, I sort of can't believe, really, how wrong it's going for him. I know that, you know, there's this historic thing of the third season and all that kind of stuff, but it's still quite extraordinary how it's managing to implode up there.
Extraordinary and hilarious.
And hilarious. And let's be clear, fantastic for us, because, you know, for all these 7 wins, I'm not convinced we look like a top four team yet, a Champions League team yet. So we will need at least one team to make quite a hash of things. And fortunately, United are.
Yeah, keep it up. Keep it up as long as you can keep it up,
guys.
Keep
them in the job, frankly. That's what I hope. I hope that they don't have the bottle to sack him too soon.
Yeah, he'll just do something he'll do something crazy, you know, to force their hand. You know, he'll pick, I don't know, Mata in goal or something like that.
Yeah, I wouldn't put it past him at this stage.
All right, we are going to take a little break. We're going to come back with your questions and more in part two right after this.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Welcome back to the Arsecast Extra. This is part two where we answer the questions you sent to us on Twitter at Gunnerblog, at Arseblog, and also on the Arseblog Facebook page, facebook.com/TheArseblog. And actually, I remembered this week, James. I remembered to post the thing on Facebook. So we have some questions from Facebook people, and hello to all of you on Facebook who listen to the show. We have questions, a lot of questions about Aaron Ramsey and what we should do with him and his place in the team, which I want to touch on. But I'm just curious, before we get into the questions, what did you make of the news that came out during the week about the fact that there was an agreement between Ramsey and Arsenal to sign a new contract? And then that agreement was, before a contract could be presented, that agreement was rescinded, and now it seems like no further negotiations are going to take place and Aaron Ramsey's going to leave. Well, what do you make of the situation? Are you surprised?
Not really. I'm not surprised that he's not going to sign. You know, he had plenty of offers from the club over the past few months. I mean, I think going back quite a while, to be honest, and hadn't really given any indication that he was going to do the deal. I think, you know, my preference was for Arsenal to deal with this in the summer. And I felt that in that last fortnight of the window, given that he wasn't signing a new deal, we should have been looking to sell Aaron Ramsey and make whatever money we could out of him. But what's interesting, I suppose the only surprise is that Unai Emery spent all summer talking about what an important player he considered Ramsey to be. And one can only assume that he has been involved in the decision-making process that has led to the withdrawal of that contract offer. So, I don't know. I guess whatever he's seen between then and the start of this, and now, has obviously dissuaded him that Ramsey is worth that level of investment. It's difficult to unpick the precise timing of events, but it does feel like either the takeover by Kroenke, the complete takeover, perhaps more relevantly, the departure of Ivan Gazidis, have been significant factors in this all kind of falling apart.
There are a number of factors, aren't there? You wonder if it is in some way financial. You wonder if it's to do with the Kroenkes not wanting to sanction another big wage. But then if that was the case, why wouldn't they sell him and get some money in and reinvest, or at least use that money to offset what you have to pay to get another player in? It was suggested to me that after the agreement was made between Ramsey and the club, there was a period of silence, a prolonged period of silence, which I think the club didn't take kindly to. So maybe that was part of it as well. I don't quite know. It's just weird the way it's played out, isn't it?
It's unusual as well for it to be. It feels very definitive at this stage.
Yeah.
It feels like both parties are like, and that's it, and he won't be signing a new contract. And that's relatively rare, I think, in the game, that you hear at this stage, yep, he's off at the end of the season, but he's still there for now and kind of stuck with it. Like, that's, I can't remember many occasions where it was as public and pronounced and clear as that.
Yeah.
And I do think, really, I mean, I know we've got questions about Ramsey, but for me, it casts big doubt over whether or not he'll be here beyond January.
Yeah, but I mean,
but how can you force a player to go?
You can't force. I mean, if you're Aaron Ramsey, realistically, would you go in January unless the absolute perfect offer came along? Would you go?
No.
If you weren't playing, would you go?
Unless something extraordinary like what happened with Alexis happened. You know, that was a situation where, for whatever reason, United, well, I guess the reason was to stop Man City getting him. United were prepared to go that extra mile and pay him something silly.
Yeah.
I can't quite see that replicating itself. And one would imagine, surely, the United have kind of been burnt enough by the Alexis deal to not do something like that again.
Yeah, I mean, United do have a long-standing interest in Aaron Ramsey. Yep. It's fair to say, right?
Yeah, that's definitely fair to say. They were sniffing around the situation, well, more than sniffing around it, I think, last summer. And I would expect them to be on the case again. But I think that what a Bosman does is it opens up Europe as a destination for Ramsey, and maybe that is what's in his mind.
Yeah. In which case, you can't blame him. I wouldn't blame him if he felt he could get a move to a big European club. He's going to be, what, 28? You know, I don't think it's I don't like hold any ill will towards Aaron Ramsey at all. I found it strange, actually. I know he's a divisive player. I understand that. I know that he is a player who divides opinion in a big way. But, you know, he's also a guy who's been with us for 10 years. He's our longest serving player. He's always given us 100% in every game he's played in. He's had his injury problems. You know, some might say that perhaps some of the injury problems were because he was being played when he shouldn't have been played. But there you go. He scored a winner in two FA Cup finals for us. You know, I don't understand why there's such vitriol towards him. Even if you don't particularly like him as a player, I don't get why people... I don't get what it is about Aaron Ramsey that makes people mad. You know, he's just quite an unassuming, inoffensive kind of guy.
He's a bit of a Paul Scholes in some ways. You know, he's not one of these footballers who seems to care that much about the limelight. You know, I think he's, you know, he doesn't give two hoots about the media, does he? I mean, anyone who's seen him give an interview recognises that. And I was pleasantly surprised, I'm going to say, by the reception he got when he went off against Watford.
Were you worried?
Yeah, I was, because that's football these days. You know, we hate the people who leave, and, you know, it's quite rare that you see someone respected or shown any kind of love when they say they're going to leave the club. But he got a decent ovation, even though he hadn't played well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that did surprise me a bit, and pleasantly so. I do think, though, that... I know that he's a committed guy, and I know that he's, you know, been a good servant of the club. That's not in question. What is in question is whether someone who is definitely going to leave should be part of the planning of a new team and a new era.
Yeah.
I think that's the issue. I'm not saying I don't think he'll try. I'm not sure he'll leave his foot in. I'm not sure he'll go, you know, that extra yard. I'm just saying, what's the point? Because he's going to walk away.
Yeah, I mean, do you think perhaps his involvement in the team was because there was this agreement and there was an expectation that he would sign on? Maybe that's part of why Emery has been using him and been building around him, and then all of a sudden the rug has been pulled out from that. I mean, we have a question, one of many that are very similar. This comes from Agent Gonzo, who's at agent_gonz, and he says, considering the news that Ramsey is not going to sign a new contract, do you think he should automatically be benched and replaced with a player that has a long-term contract, for example, Mkhitaryan or Iwobi?
I think automatically. I don't think automatically. If Ramsey was on fire this season and he was playing brilliantly, I don't think I'd be advocating leaving him out of the team. However, I genuinely think that leaving him out the side might enable us to field a more balanced 11. So I think it makes sense from that regard. And it doesn't make sense to try and crowbar him and Ozil into the team because it's not going to be the plan moving forward beyond this season. And I'm not sure his performances are bringing enough to justify persisting with him. We don't even need to protect his value anymore, really, because he's probably going to go for nothing. So
yeah.
I think use him as it suits us, but, you know, I would be looking at bringing him out of the side now just because he's had an opportunity and he's not really delivered.
Yeah, I wouldn't argue. I wouldn't argue with that. You know, I think you have to make your plans around the people who are committed, which is, we spoke about it last week, I think. You know, if Mesut Ozil, for all his flaws, has committed to a long-term contract, maybe we should, you know, play him in his best position or something close to his best position rather than trying to shoehorn both he and Ramsey into the team.
Ozil looked a lot better, didn't he, when he switched inside? I know the game was, you know, maybe a little bit more stretched by that point, but he really did come to life. And I think that is partly down to him and also partly down to the way the structure of the front four changed. It just felt like you suddenly had players more comfortable in their positions. I mean, it sounds devastatingly simple, but we haven't had that for the majority of the season.
Yeah, true. Okay, your question.
Well, look, this is kind of about the front four as well. It's from Arsenal Cannon Picks, who's at Ask Cannon Picks, and they say, "Hi guys, I've been a long-term admirer of Alex Iwobi. Is it about time Arsenal fans start taking him seriously as a regular starter? He's one of the best natural dribblers of the ball at the club, and for balance, should he be starting games?"
I wouldn't have a problem. I wouldn't have a problem with Iwobi starting games. You know, if you take Ramsey out of the team, you move Ozil central, I got no problem with Iwobi coming in. I think he's making progress again under Unai Emery. There was an interview with him at the weekend where he's talked about how much he's learning and how much he likes working with Emery and the hard work and all that kind of stuff. And we spoke about his physical development and the hard work he's obviously put in there. When he's come on, he's made a difference. He looks exciting. He looks lively. You know, not everything is working for him. Not everything comes off. But you can see, perhaps for the first time with Alex Iwobi, that there's a bit of confidence in the way that he's playing. You know, he looked for a while when he first came into the team, and I guess it's a fairly natural thing, like he didn't quite feel like he belonged. I think we talked about it before, where we were waiting for this performance from Iwobi, which told us, yes, I believe I'm good enough to be in this team. I believe I'm good enough to start. I'm not sure we ever really, really saw it. And I think we're beginning to see that now. That he looks confident when he comes on. He looks like he knows what he's supposed to be doing. You know, he's trying things. He's being a bit more ambitious. So, I think if he continues this way under Unai Emery, he's going to develop into a better player. And that can only be good for us. And when you look at the front four, when you look at the imbalance in there, you know, there are places up for grabs. If he can come in and provide that little bit of stability or balance, then he could very well play himself into the team as a regular starter.
Yeah, I think there are three guys who are kind of pushing on the fringes of that front four. You've got Iwobi, you've got Mkhitaryan, and you've got Welbeck. And I think of the three, Iwobi's the man at the front of the queue, really. I think just, you know, what he's done coming off the bench, what he's done starting games, the fact that he was picked in the Chelsea match and did pretty well on that occasion, I think that all is in his favour. And I think he really does deserve to start the next Premier League game. Whether or not that happens, I don't know. We have, as you said, got to go to Azerbaijan, and maybe Emery will see him as one of the key components of that team rather than the one who play Fulham. But
yeah.
I just feel like we look a bit of a better side with him there. There's something about his degree of comfort on both flanks. I mean, against Watford, there were times when he was on the left, times when he was on the right, and he sort of shone in on both sides of the pitch, which hasn't always been the case for him. And one of the things that struck me about that interview you mentioned is that Emery has sort of told him not to focus on the mistakes he makes, not to dwell on his bad moments in games. And that seems to have done wonders for his confidence, because he's much more proactive, much more aggressive in the way that he plays the game. I don't mean that he's, you know, out there punching people. I mean, he's taking the ball forward. He's driving forward all the time. He's looking to make things happen. And I've been really impressed with him, and I'm really pleased for him, because he does seem like a great guy. You know, every time you see him, if anything, you wish he was, you know, that's that funny thing about his character. You wish he doesn't really seem quite like a footballer. You know, he's got that kind of humility to him that you don't always expect of guys playing Premier League football.
Sure.
And I think he might need to shed a bit of that to fulfil his potential, but it seems that he's getting there. And I really like him. And you know, we finished the Watford game with, I think it was Iwobi on the right, Welbeck on the left, Ozil at 10, and Lacazette up front. And those aren't our best four attackers by any stretch of the imagination, but in some ways they kind of fit those roles as well as any other four that we have.
Yeah.
And something that struck me about Welbeck coming on, by the way, was that, and I think it happened in the build-up to the second goal. I know he won the slide tackle in midfield, but before that, he won a long ball. I think it was a goal kick from Leno, and he won a header. And it happened two or three times in the time he was on the pitch. And I was like, suddenly like, well, one of the things he does is he gives you an outlet. You know, when we've got Aubameyang on the left, we're booting the goal kicks towards him. And frankly, he's not really winning them. And we've not got anyone in our starting front four who's going to win you a header. So that was sort of an interesting dimension that he brings to proceedings. But I'd still, you know, if you said it's one of him or Iwobi, I think it probably deserves to be Iwobi right now.
Well, I mean, the thing about Iwobi is he has signed a new long-term deal. Are you a little bit surprised that there's no talk of a Welbeck extension?
Yeah, I had a question about that. It came from Adam Keyes, at underscore Adam Keyes, and he said, should Arsenal be tying Welbeck down to a new deal this month? And then he added, surely a club can't afford to lose Ramsey and a key squad player at the same time. I am a bit surprised, to be honest. And I, my impression is that, you know, the decision was made about Welbeck probably not by Emery, probably by the powers that be, Arsene or Raul and Sven more likely. But I think Emery must be looking at it and thinking, why are we not keeping this guy?
Because
he's just very, very handy.
He's pretty useful, isn't he? You know, I mean, he's never going to be the number one striker, but he's got 4 goals this season. He's athletic. He's strong. He can play striker. He can play either side of a striker in a front three. Mm. Like you say, he's good physically. He's quick. You know, he's a hard-working guy as well. He's a really hard worker. He's someone who will, I'm sure, follow instructions. Go out there, Danny, and do this. Yes. You know, he's brought up that way at Manchester United, you know, under Ferguson. I think he's pretty useful. And I do wonder what we would have to do if we were to let him go. For example, it seems to me, just based on the short time we've seen Unai Emery, that there are other players in this squad that he is less convinced by than Danny Welbeck. Right?
For sure.
So yeah. Mohamed Elneny didn't even make the squad at the weekend. Mm. Henrik Mkhitaryan played in the Carabao Cup and played in the Europa League after the first 2 games of the season, in which I thought he played all right. You know, he made some contributions, scored the goal against Chelsea, etc., etc. He seems to have, you know, marginalized him a little bit, whereas Welbeck is somebody who he turns to. We were looking for a goal when he made that change on Saturday. When Welbeck came on, it was 0-0. He had one substitute left. It wasn't Mkhitaryan that he brought on, it was Welbeck.
For Aubameyang, no less, as well. You know, it's a significant gamble. I mean, I know he's had injuries as well, but he's 27. He's not. I think he's 28 in November, something like that. So, you know, if you gave him a 3-year deal, 4-year deal, he's still got time. You know, he's still got some good years left at his peak. And I even think, even if it doesn't work out in the long run, surely, you know, we've talked about him being a valuable asset. He's still in the England squad. I mean, he's probably worth £20 million if he's under contract, at least, you'd have to think. So I don't get it. And I don't get the impression that he would be desperate to go. You know, I feel like he likes being at Arsenal and he feels that he can make a big contribution there. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but that's certainly the impression I get. He's never someone who's looked like he's agitating to go anywhere. I think I would approve, to be honest. I know that we've got Reece Nelson and Eddie Nketiah, and people will talk about that, but I just think with what Welbeck's contributing at the moment, it's probably worth giving him a new contract. Mm.
Okay, here's a question from Facebook. This is from Pete Bretzlaff, who says, is Lacazette too honest? There have been a few times this season where he could have earned a penalty if he went to ground just a little bit easier. And there was certainly an example of that in the game against Watford at the weekend. I mean, another question, I think, of more or less the same question, if I can find it. There was an extra little bit to it. Bum, bum, bum. Okay, it's from Thomas Anderson on Twitter, who's at Taco Thumpa, who says, or Taco Tom PA, maybe that's what it is. He says, Lacazette has now had 2 clear penalties denied because of standing up and playing on rather than falling. I don't like VAR, but is it the only solution?
Yes, I think it is. I mean, I think it will. I think, you know, if we have VAR on Saturday, we get a penalty.
Do you think that would happen? I mean, would a penalty be given in those circumstances where there's a foul but a player stays on his feet?
You know, I'm trying to think back to the World Cup and think if something like that happened.
Does the player not have to go down for that decision to be, for them to weigh up that decision? Because we saw it even the other night, Alex Iwobi, where he was clearly fouled, tried to stay on his feet, ended up going down, and there was VAR in that Carabao Cup game.
True.
And there was no penalty.
What I would say about Lacazette is that I'm not sure if he's too honest. What I think is he stays on his feet when he thinks he can score. You know, he loves scoring goals, and I think that that's what's happening in most of these occasions. He thinks he can get to the ball. He thinks he can get the goal for himself. I like how physical he's been this season, and he seems really, you know, he commits a lot of fouls, Lacazette. because he's trying to get back in at people, and it's quite handy. You know, he talks about the need to stop attacks higher up the pitch, and he's doing that. And I kind of feel like that combative spirit is probably partly why he's not going to ground in these situations. But I suppose if they don't give them, I it's one of those things. I don't want to sit here and say, well, yeah, he should go to ground. But
Can I do that then?
Yeah, you do it then.
He should go to ground. He definitely should.
Yeah, I mean, I know, I hear you, but then just part of you not... As
every
a fan, does part of you not like it
other
that someone says on their feet?
Yeah, look, yeah, I do actually, I admire it in a way, but I also would admire a penalty more.
Right.
Yeah? I mean, I get it, you don't want your players to dive. That's, I think, a different thing than if there's a foul and you go down. I think that's different. That's not necessarily diving. It's just making sure the referee knows that you've been fouled.
Mm.
I think there's the difference. You know, it is good. It is good to see a player ride a challenge. Remember there was a goal a few years ago Theo Walcott scored in the box against Newcastle, maybe? I think it was a crazy game. He won like 7-3, something like that. And he skipped into the box and he got fouled. And everyone kind of stopped because they had sort of assumed that a penalty would be given, and he got up and just scored. Yeah.
He did it before that against Chelsea, I remember once. Do you remember in the 5-3
game? Yeah, that's right.
Game, I think.
That's right. Yeah. That was You know, so there is something to be said for it, but you've got to make sure you do the ball in the back of the net thing. You know, this would probably have been a more contentious issue or a bigger talking point if we hadn't scored those two goals. I think in tighter games, in moments like that, as a centre forward, if you're fouled in the box, go down. Simple as that. You know, it's admirable. I get it. You know, what a guy. What a sportsman. What a Corinthian. But get the fuck down.
Get down. Get on the floor.
Get
man.
On the fucking floor, motherfucker.
Well, we all remember last season, wasn't it, when Danny Welbeck broke the spirit of football with his diving antics against AC Milan. Do you remember?
No, I've the completely
about
forgotten
that. Exactly, it was mad. But I don't know if you remember, I'm sure it was against AC Milan at home. He went to ground with a little push in the back, and people were up in arms, weren't they?
Were they?
The mass media. I'm glad that you've forgotten. Because it shows how ridiculous a storm it was that it could blow over so quickly. But yeah, look, in principle, I have no issue with it whatsoever. As you said briefly, everyone else is doing it.
Yeah, yeah.
If you can't beat them...
Definitely join them
rather than lose.
Yeah.
let's have another question. This is from Facebook as well. Show some love to Facebook today, and it's from Linus Widner. And Linus says... Should we start Leno or Martinez against Carabag?
Martinez.
Yes, I wonder if Emery's post-match comments about having three world-class goalkeepers were sort of a little hint that maybe
Emery's
going to get.
Yeah. Straight out of the Arsene Wenger playbook,
manual,
that one, isn't it?
Yeah. He probably left that on his desk, just for the record.
Yeah, you've got three world-class.
Pick Saka every game, you have three world-class goalkeepers.
I mean, I like Emi Martinez. He seems like a really good guy, but I'm not sure you can call a goalkeeper of 26 who hasn't played 50 games in his career world-class. You know,
I think he will play. I think, you know.
Yeah, I think he has to, because if Leno picks up an injury, then Martinez is going to be our Premier League goalkeeper. And I think if you have to choose, you know, one or the other to play in the Premier League, it's going to be Leno, not Martinez. So protect your valuable player in that regard. And play Martinez in the Carabao Cup and also in the Europa League as long as Petrček is out. And it's, you know, it's a good opportunity for Martinez as well. You know, it's a long season. Didn't we have a season where, was it the Invincible season where we had three goalkeepers?
Was it that season?
Yeah, it was Richard Wright, Stuart Taylor,
and Jens Lehmann.
Jens Lehmann.
No, we're thinking of the different seasons, aren't we?
It
was 2001-02.
Yes, it was Seaman, Taylor and Richard Wright
Yeah.
who all played enough games in that season to pick up a league title, a league winner's medal. So I'm not saying that's going to be an issue for this particular season, because I don't think we're going to win the league. But it's a good chance for Martinez, I think, to play and maybe, you know, show either he's ready to be a number two if and when things go that way, or we have to think about a different solution. So that'll be the way I do it.
I would be inclined to agree. We had a few questions just saying, you know, we touched on the part one, but how many first teamers would you actually take? I mean, Flanny Ball's at Flanny Ball. So given the distance we have to travel to Karabag and back, how many first teamers would you actually take even to sit on the bench?
Not many. Well, yeah. Let me think of the team we could play. I mean, I'd play...
Kolasinac is back, so yeah, that's... Finally, Monreal gets a rest.
So I'd play Mustafi, because he's not really first-teamer. okay, so we're going to play Martinez, Lichtsteiner. I guess he's going to play Holding. Maybe Holding Mustafi.
I guess maybe Socrates. If he's, no, I wouldn't play Socrates.
No. Mustafi, Holding, Kolasinac, Guendouzi, Elneny, Mkhitaryan. Might as well play Ramsey.
Maybe.
Welbeck.
Smith Rowe you've got as well.
Smith Rowe, Nketiah. I mean, you've got enough there to make a team that won't contain too many of the team that will play Fulham. Maybe a few on the bench if you need to, but, you know, the reality is, do you want to put guys who are going to be important on Sunday at Craven Cottage through... How long is the flight?
Oh, I don't know. Should we have a look?
Yeah, how long does it take to fly from London to... Where the fuck is Karabag? Baku?
It's 5 hours, 30 minutes.
And I think it was Amy who was saying on the... Yeah, so you got to fly to Baku... And then you've got a 3-hour road trip as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's some serious travel. So
I would be looking to leave as many as I could. I mean, I'm not saying play 11 kids, but, I wouldn't, if the bench wasn't the strongest and it meant that someone like, I don't know, Lacazette or Ozil could... stay in London.
Okay, actually, Karabag is in Baku, so it's not that game that has the 3-hour trip. I think it's the Ukrainian team. I think it's Vorskla. Yeah. Either way, it's still plenty of travel, isn't it?
It's far enough, to be honest. I'm just looking ahead. Fortunately, that Vorskla game, I don't think we have a match that weekend. How can that be after that?
Give us a look.
We don't in the fixture list.
Let's see.
Just at the end of November.
The end of November.
29th we play.
Yeah, but then the Sunday is the North London Derby.
Why is that not in my diary?
Maybe your diary's shit.
I think my diary is shit.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's a real worry then. It was completely the opposite of what I was saying.
Yeah, that's one where I think we'll fucking bring out all the kids.
We might be qualified by then.
Yeah, we should be. We should be. And we can play, you know, the likes of, you know, Barnaby Stingwing and all those guys. So.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we'll see. I mean, look, to be honest, we should still have enough, I think, to qualify however much we rotate, really, from this group stage. I'd be staggered.
Yeah.
Sporting, I think, you know, will be a bit of a test, but... Aside from that, I would imagine we'll be all right.
Yeah, and that's a much shorter flight. So, you know, you're not going. Okay, I think it's my turn to ask a question. And it comes from... I have it here. Oh, for fuck's sake. I did have it here. Roland Godfrey says, no penalties conceded so far this season. Coincidence? Or are we starting to learn?
We did used to give away an awful lot of those, didn't we?
Yeah.
Particularly last season. I don't know if it's a big enough sample to draw a definitive answer from. Because it's not like I think Mustafi's suddenly become a sensible centre-half, you know?
Yeah.
But it's a good thing. It's definitely nice because, you know, we, as we know, we haven't got our goalkeeper. Our normal goalkeeper doesn't really save them. So it's a good job we're not giving them away.
Yeah.
I don't know. I haven't noticed that we're necessarily much more sensible. Have you?
No. No. I mean, maybe we're not making as many last-ditch tackles as we used to. I don't know if that's good or if it's deliberate or what. I don't know. Yeah, there's
I'm just trying to think. I mean, yeah, I don't know either, to be honest with you. Sorry, I know that's quite a banal answer there, but
Have we had any penalties this season?
Not sure. Don't think we have. Everyone learnt their lessons from VAR in the summer, and everyone's on best behaviour.
No one's doing any fouls in the box this season.
Yeah, what's happened.
That's it.
That's what the World Cup did.
Lacazette certainly hasn't had any penalties.
No, well, he's too honest, isn't he?
Yeah, too honest. Get on the fucking floor.
This is sort of relevant to Lacazette. Corey Checher, who's at Corey Checher, I don't know if I pronounced that right either time, says, any insight as to why the Arsenal players slapped the goal scorer three times on the head? Have you noticed this?
Yeah. Yeah. There was a brilliant bit like when Mustafi scored the other week. Remember Lacazette? Yeah. He fucking clattered him. He really gave him a good fucking seeing to with the slaps. I don't know. I presume it's just something that's grown out of training or whatever it is. I wonder if that's why Lacazette missed that chance in the first half. He didn't want to get slapped in the head.
True. He prefers to be the slapper than the slappy.
Yeah. He's going to become the assist king so he can just slap people in the head all day long. I don't know. I guess it's just a little funny thing that they've decided to do or grown to do after training or whatever it is. Or maybe it's just something that they do so they can hit Mustafi when he scores. They had a meeting, they sat down, and they said, lads, we've got to do something about Mustafi. I really want to hit him in the head, like at least three times. Okay, well, why don't we do this? When we score, we all just sort of tap each other on the head three times, you know, gently, playfully. What larks, like two young men running through a field during the summer. But when it comes to Mustafi, you can really just sort of...
Let loose. Let all that frustration go.
Channel your inner Muhammad Ali.
I think you might be onto something there. But I don't know anything beyond that. I mean, it does seem to be just one of those things. Like that little dance they do when they nutmeg each other in training. You know.
Oh, I don't like that.
Yeah, you've never enjoyed the dancing. It reminds you of Boué and Adebayor.
Yeah, it's not really the dancing. It's just trauma. They make this weird noise when they do it.
Like that, isn't
it? Yeah. And I don't mean to keep harping on about Mustafi, but he seems to be the one who gets, like, right into it. Like that bit where they do it and then everyone stops, but Mustafi is still doing it.
He's carrying on.
He's still carrying on. And everyone's standing there going,
He's still doing it.
This is this is a bit awkward now.
Yeah,
he's still doing it. I don't know where to look. Just put your eyes on the ground. He's still doing it.
He won't stop.
What's wrong with him? Oh, look! Someone have a word with Steve Bold. He's still doing it. My God! Yeah, he's playing like backwards air guitar now. What the fuck?
Maybe he's doing it during games, and that's why he's not really paying attention to anything.
Yeah, yeah. In his head, it's like that bit with Homer, isn't it? Where Homer thinks and it's just like a... that kind of thing. Whereas with Mustafi, it's like... whatever that thing they do is. I don't know. All right. Let's have a question from Bearded... Hannon, at Bearded Hannon, Beardy McBeardface, who says, we've played the Bees and the Hornets this week and won both games. Are there any insects we can't beat?
Giant spiders. If we had to play against giant spiders, I would be concerned.
Yeah, that would be a concern, all right.
If we were travelling to face them in the Europa League, a football team made entirely... enormous arachnids. I'd just send all the kids and let them get eaten.
I'd just send Mustafi. Spiders have got a big advantage, though, you know, because they've got extra legs.
Eight of them.
Like, would they have
eight of them?
Eight of the cunts. I mean, yeah. would they have to wear boots on every foot?
On all eight, or just only on two?
Only on two. That could be our advantage, you see.
Do you think if they touch the ball with any of their other six legs, it's handball?
Yeah.
Just boot up the wall against them.
Yeah. That would be amazing. Yeah. I mean, I'd say we'd struggle to beat those. I'd also say we'd struggle to beat scorpions, you know, because, James, how could you beat this? I mean, how could we compete with that?
I mean, I don't think anyone could compete with that.
I don't think they could. I don't think they could.
Who can resist the wind of change, after all?
The winds of change.
The winds of change will blow you away.
with your eight legs.
Yeah. Do not try to stop me, spiders. I'm controlling the winds of change. Yeah. That would be good.
Yeah, that would be good.
I mean, maybe Mustafi loves scorpions. It would make sense.
The scorpions or scorpions themselves?
Oh, the scorpions.
That would make some sense to me. Yeah. Maybe that's the whole thing. The is him doing the guitar solo from Winds of Change.
It could be.
It's the magic of the moment.
Oh, it's been a while since I heard that song. Thanks for bringing it back to my attention.
There's everybody's earworm for today. You can thank us later.
There was something missing in my life this whole time, and I didn't know it.
Right.
It was that song.
Okay, well, look, I think we better call it quits here. I am going to put this podcast up on Sunday night. What I'm going to do... Yeah, I know, it's crazy. What I'm going to do is I'm going to put up a tweet saying, do people want the podcast tonight? And regardless of what people say, I'm just going to put it up anyway.
Great. I hope they all say no.
So do I. And then it'd be like, ha ha, well, I'll show you.
I mean, lots of people aren't going to listen to it on the Sunday, are they? They're going to wait till their Monday morning commute, presumably.
Exactly. It'll be there for them.
At least they can get it safely downloaded. They can do that job.
Exactly. Do it at home. You're not sort of, oh my God, I've left the house and I've got to use my data to download the podcast. You can do it on your Wi-Fi at home. It'll be all set up perfectly for you in the morning. So there you go. Yeah.
Okay, well, listen at your leisure, guys. Listen at your leisure.
Absolutely. Anyway, congratulations again on the 250, James.
Incredible.
Congratulations to everybody for listening for that long.
I mean, yeah, congratulations for listening this long, long this week. You've done well. If you made it past all the scorpion stuff, you're a true fan.
Scorpions and really aggressive German spiders. Yeah.
Yes.
Gigantic German spiders. Wonderful stuff. we will have an Arsecast on Friday, of course, when we look back on the game against Karabag in the Europa League. You can find all our archives on acast.com/arseblog. If you want to get more podcasts, sign up to be an Arseblog member on Patreon. patreon.com/arseblog. Costs just a fiver a month. And we'll catch you on the next one. Until then.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.